105.
We've just arrived at Jimmy's, somewhere where I've certainly never been before, and Linda's never been before. We're here with Jerry. Jerry, good morning.
Good morning, pleasure.
Is it a quiet night at Jimmy's, a normal night?
It's one of the unusually quiet nights, yeah, I'd say. I'd say it's very pleasant for, let's say, yeah.
Just touching wood.
For now, yeah. Yeah, usually we get a few guests coming up and down just for a cigarette. Some people can't sleep, some people get really hot in the rooms, but it's been fairly quiet tonight.
Now, I've driven by Jimmy's. I've lived in the area 15 years, I think it is now. I've driven by. It's always struck me, I've never been here before, it always struck me that it was going to be a sort of a church hall type scenario. I kind of had in mind, and you're going to have to forgive me, that I kind of had in mind a sort of a camp kitchen type arrangement and camp beds. This is really actually very plush, very well fitted out. How are things arranged? Upstairs, are there all bedrooms or...?
So we spread downstairs is completely office area, so meeting rooms, accountants, etc. So all that is based downstairs along with a courtyard and laundry rooms and so on. The ground floor, which is where we are now, is the main lounge, the kitchens and the reception, and upstairs is completely separated for guests. So all the storage and all the rooms upstairs.
Okay, and how many people are in tonight?
We've got 24 people on pretty much every night. I mean, today I believe we've got about 22, but usually it's 24. We're full pretty much 365 days a year.
Okay, and how does this work? We've been talking to people throughout the evening. The first words that anybody ever seems to utter upon arriving in Cambridge is, I came to Cambridge, I went to Jimmy's. It really sounds like you're the focal point for homeless in the city.
I mean, I would say, along with probably Winter Comfort, we're the front doors of homelessness. When it comes to Cambridge, you can't really get anywhere without using us. So without going through our service, you won't get to the hostels in Cambridge if you're local. If you're outside, sometimes street outreach won't be able to help you within, you know, a few days, then maybe we will. So you have to go through us to get anywhere if you're homeless in Cambridge.
People do present themselves to you, and it's either here or Mandela House, is that right? That they actually have to sort of turn up and make themselves known?
Mandela House, in a way, that's where they go to make a homeless application. But to get here, we have to assess them first to see what their needs are, and then the longer they present, the more often they present, the bigger chance they've got to get a bed when the next comes available.
And once they've got a bed, how long can they stay?
We offer them a 28-day license, throughout which our job is to find them a second stage accommodation. So it's not their job, it's our job to provide them support, getting back on benefits, etc., getting back in touch with family and so on, and making sure that they're ready for the move on, and then getting them moved on to a hostel, to a private rent accommodation, and so on.
Okay. Talk us through the sort of people you've got in tonight. Obviously, I appreciate you can't give names or anything like that, but what's the sort of age profile? Are they mainly, you know, British or...?
At the moment, I mean, with nationality-wise, I would say it's a bit of a mixture between probably Eastern European and British, mostly British. When it comes to the age, unfortunately, lately it's been a bit lower. Usually, I would say it'd be roughly about 30, between 30 and 35. Now it came down to about 25 to 30. Wow. There's a lot more young people coming in nowadays.
Any clues as to why that is? Do you get to hear much of their backstories when they arrive?
I mean, we always get to the bottom of a guest. We try to. We kind of have to find out where the stuff went wrong or what did went wrong to be able to help them. So we always get their life stories in a way. And mostly it's... I'd say 90% of it's relationship breakdowns or just not enough support in particular mental health area. So that's where kids try to turn around to parents. Parents don't understand the issue, and then it just gets worse and worse.
Yeah. We've been out on the streets of Cambridge tonight, and one of the guys we met, who was sleeping rough on pedicure, he's been on the streets, he says, for 10 years. Is there a point at which you can't help anymore and these people stay on the streets?
That's probably John you met. As I like to say it to most of my guests, if you meet us halfway, we'll go all the way for you. Right. So we offer all the help that we can possibly give. So as long as someone will take a hand out and say, okay, I need that help, we'll give it to you. So if someone doesn't want to get helped, I mean, no one will help him. No one is able to help him. So people need to know that they need to be ready to receive it, and then we'll give it. And unfortunately, on some occasions, you will get people that you just won't be able to help. It is sad, but it's reality.
Sure. So, I mean, one of the guys we met tonight, I'm going to take a stab and go, if he's not an alcoholic, he's not far off. Are alcohol dependency and drug dependency, are they a barrier to preventing people getting in here?
I would say it's a day-to-day thing. It's not something that we're not used to. I mean, drug dependency isn't necessarily a barrier. So as long as we can provide them drug support, so as long as they work with inclusion, we can still help them. So I think the only barrier for us is when someone is unmedicated or doesn't want to receive help with his drinking or drug take. So that's when it could become a barrier, but it's not a necessity.
So if the snow was to hit the ground towards the end of this year and into the beginning of next year, and the guys we've met tonight go, do you know what? This is 10 years. That's me done. I need to shape up. I need to get this. I've had people trying to help me in the past. I've walked away. I'm going to give it another go. They could start to present themselves here, and they could still be on the road to recovery.
Well, of course, we have a lot of guests that returned because of whatever the circumstances were, whatever the reasons. So we will give chance to people that we do know and we don't know. It's not that we pick and choose. I mean, if someone's been out there for 10 years, we're probably well aware of the person, and we know he probably doesn't want help. But if he's going to come into the doors and says, we'll say, okay, I need help, then we'll just take him in.
Very good. Is it mainly men here, or do you have a strict policy on?
No, we do mix. Mixed genders, obviously females got single rooms, because we do have few shared rooms where we can stick two males in. But usually I'd say it's about 80 to 20 when it comes to proportions. Lately we had a bit more females than males in, but usually it's male predominant.
And you've been saying it's often the result of relationship breaks down and things like that. But if women have been subjected to domestic violence and things like that, would they tend to go? You don't act as a refuge in that way, do you?
We do take people in that are, let's say, fleeing violence. It is a case quite often. People mostly choose to get away from the place where they've been abused.
Yes.
So it doesn't necessarily have to be their home. It can be abusive neighbors. It can be people chasing them for money, whatever the reason. Sometimes people in occasions like that prefer to be homeless than put up with the abuse. So unfortunately, that is the reality. And I'd say quite a big part of our guests throughout, ever since we've been open, has been fleeing from violence.
Okay, I mean, you said it yourself. It's a peaceful night here. It is. It's all calm. It's all quiet. How does tomorrow shape up? When will things start to get lively here, and what will happen?
The main area doesn't open till 7 in the morning. That's where we open. That's where we prepare for breakfast. That's where usually guests start waking up. Now, rooms shut at 9, so by 9 o'clock everyone is here, ready. That's where appointment starts. That's where activity starts. Obviously, we give them weekends off, but we start nagging them back from Monday to Friday. And provide them with tons of activities, which are purely educational most of the time. So obviously we do provide sport activities as well, like golf, bowling, football, etc. But we run something called Life Skills, which give them workshops every morning. So it's starting from healthy eating, ending on budgeting, on universal credits, on how to put up with your new neighbors that are noisy, or how to live in a new place. You know, all them basic life skills we try to provide to our guests to make sure that they're ready to move, that they know what they're gonna be putting up with, because in here they pretty much get it all provided. So we want to make sure that they can actually stand on their own 2 feet before they go. And then day pretty much carries on like this till about 5. All the meetings kind of slow down then, maybe a few catch-ups with key workers, and then they can pretty much get ready for dinner, which starts at 7. Watch telly till about midnight, and that's when we start cleaning and day starts over.
What's your own story with Jimmy's? How did you get involved?
My own story, funnily enough, when we used to be on the old side a few years back, I used to be a guest. When I left the army, I had a bit of a trouble, so to say, with both alcohol and with adjusting back to living in society, and I was stubborn enough, or silly enough, to be too proud to come to Jimmy's, you know, to mix myself with people that I didn't really knew, with homeless people, so to say, because I thought, like the rest of the society, that they're mostly probably drunks and drug addicts, and I said that's not me. But after I believe 2 months of being moved around by police, they just said go to Jimmy's, which I did. Back then I was completely scared. I remember that, but I got in and I received probably one of the best supports I can remember till now, and staff member called Ken told me back then that doesn't matter what you did in the past, start with a clean sheet, start today. My name's Ken, pleasure to meet you, and let's crack on, as he said. And I believe just over a month later I was in a hostel. A few months later I was back on my feet. And within the next few months, I was working for another homeless charity organization. And then when I felt ready to kind of give back what's been given to me, I knocked on Jimmy's doors and I said, okay, I'm prepared now. Now I understand, you know, I've been there. Now I want to do it. You know, I want to give to people what's been given to me, because it completely turned the life around, both with opinion and with just being, you know, when you realize that the less you got, the more you appreciate.
Yes.
So that's what it made me realize. I think that was one of the most important lessons of my life, that even when you're at bottom, people will give their hand to you and say, I'll pick you up.
That's interesting. You say you're in the armed forces. You're not alone, are you? And down around Plymouth, I remember spending a couple of nights in Plymouth and the streets of Plymouth with former naval people and that. Have you got buddies and that who you knew who went the same way?
I have a lot of friends that went similar way, mostly through their PTSD, because they couldn't share accommodation, for example, because of the PTSD, because of night terrors and so on. The worst part about being ex-serviceman is that you get that pride that just doesn't allow you to ask someone for help, because you pick it up as a weakness. And I remember my old boss said to me, asking for help sometimes isn't showing the weakness, it's showing that you've got someone to ask. So it's that someone who can stand behind your back is not actually showing that he's there all the time. He's just going to be there when you need him. And I thought about this for a long, long time, and I said, actually, damn it, it makes sense. Yeah. It makes sense. It didn't actually hurt after a while that I actually asked for help, because it was just eating me up from inside that I actually had to ask for help. You know, I'm a grown man, and I've been in the army, and I've seen things, and I'll be able to survive by myself. But it's not always the case. It's not always the case. I mean, homelessness is a terrible thing, which I wouldn't wish to anyone, but it can happen to anyone.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've been hearing this the entire night. So you're obviously very settled here. You seem very happy, very settled. Best bit about here?
Best bit about here? No day is the same.
Yeah.
No day's the same. We've been always saying that when you come in on the shift, you'll never get a shift that will just repeat. So it's not like a factory that you will come in and you know what you're going to do. You technically do know what you're going to do, but you never know what's going to happen. And it's not necessarily in a bad way. I mean, obviously, accidents happen, you know, people get drunk and so on. But also in a good way, you know, we try to make guests feel like they're at home, but in the same time make sure that they know it's not their home. So yeah. So we want them to live with us, you know, in as free relationship as possible. We want them to be open with us, you know, we want them to joke with us. So I would say, you know, out of 20, 24 guests, at least 18 of them are probably happier here with the staff. I mean, as happy with the staff as they are with other guests, because they feel that they can freely speak with us.
You know the story. You've been there yourself.
Yeah, exactly. So I try not to use it, because usually some people pick it up as patronizing. Mm. You know, you did it, so you think I'm gonna do it. You know, so I don't use it unless someone asks. I try not to use it as morale boost,
yeah,
or anything like that. Yeah, so unless I really have to use it, then I'll say, you know, I understand where you've been. You know, I was wearing your shoes, you know, not so long ago. So I know where you're coming from. And I'm not going to tell you where I ended, but I can tell you where you can end. You know, so I'm not going to tell you which way to go, but I can guide you a little bit, at least. So I think that is the best part, that you'll never get a day that will repeat. And I think that's amazing. That's what probably keeps me in this job, is that I'll go home and I'll remember that day, because I know that it's never going to happen again.
Yeah. All right, Jerry, it's been a pleasure to meet you. I'm very impressed. I've never been in here before. I've got to say, I think it's an amazing place. It's obviously central to the homeless situation in Cambridge. It's a key part of doing what it can, and long may it continue. Thank you.
My pleasure.